It's really hard to manage it, even the smallest stressor, because we're just not giving back to ourselves like we would give to others. So we're not equally taking care of ourselves as we do with others. Starting to recognize some of these patterns that you have and then setting things in motion so that you create more space for yourself so that you can fill up your own cup. That's very, very helpful when it comes to reducing stress.
Welcome to the Happy, Healthy Human Podcast. I'm your host, Paul Levitin. What do the happiest, healthiest humans all have in common? They are students of success. In my mission to help both you and I become the happiest, healthiest humans we can be, I have studied success at all levels. And after spending over a decade working in the field of human development and flourishing, I can tell you with certainty, success leaves clues. On this show, I investigate and explore the common clues and foundational principles that tie together success in all areas of life. Whether it's happiness, health, wealth, relationships, it's all a part of the human experience. By following these success clues and understanding the underlying success principles, you will find that success is not simply a possibility, it's guaranteed. Every Tuesday, I give you simple, straightforward action steps and tools using these clues and principles of success to help you become the happiest, healthiest human you can be. Jessica Green is an integrative health practitioner and health coach dedicated to guiding women through perimenopause and menopause. She specializes in helping women positively alter their diet and lifestyle practices, as well as helps by equipping them with strategic protocols to rebalance their body naturally. Jessica's passion is to open up the conversation of this big midlife transition to help empower women with knowledge they need so they can make sustainable changes that prolong their life and vitality. I think that when I first reached out to Jessica to have her on the show, she was a little surprised. Why is a young 30-something guy reaching out to a woman's hormone specialist? Well, as I told Jessica, it's because although I may be a man, I happen to know a lot of women. I'm a son to my mom, a brother to my sister, a partner to my girlfriend, among many other things. And I think it's incredibly short-sighted for men to not understand women's hormone cycles. I'm not saying every guy has to be an expert, but we would all do better in our personal, professional, and familial relationships if we were to better understand each other. And hormones, no matter what sex you are, affect that. So ladies and gentlemen, and everyone in between, please enjoy this conversation with Jessica Green. What is hormone health and why is it important?
Okay, hormone health. Well, you know, we have so many different kinds of hormones in our body and they can really impact how we feel, how we think, our energy levels, what we remember, what we don't remember, how we communicate, whether or not we're gaining or losing weight, if we have libido, if we don't. So hormone health is just so important. It's like all-encompassing. So we have sex hormones, we have the thyroid hormones, we have insulin, so that's another hormone as well. We've also got cortisol, and all of these act as sort of like a symphony in our body. So when they're in balance, we feel pretty good, and we could just ignore hormones because we're just cruising along. But when something is off with us, looking at your hormones first could be a really good first step.
I think that's a really important point, that when everything is going right, it's easy to ignore them. But often we are forced to pay attention when things aren't. So I want to come back to that. But I think I got out a little bit ahead of myself, because can you actually explain, like, what is a hormone? Like, you're saying how important it is and how they affect these things, but like through what mechanism, like what's actually happening in the body? What is a hormone?
That's a really good question. Like, how do I explain that? So hormones are these, I would say, taking the sort of orchestra scenario, the conductor might be pregnenolone, which is like this massive master hormone, sort of at the top of the pyramid. And this conductor is conducting all of these other bits and pieces, all these other hormones. And so if you imagine pregnenolone, this master hormone, it trickles down into a couple of different pathways. So one pathway is a stress pathway. So this would be hormones associated with dealing with stress. So that would be like cortisol, for instance, would be one of those. But there's other hormones too. There's happy hormones, like oxytocin is a happy hormone. So imagine pregnenolone is up here. It could either deal with running away from danger, so producing more cortisol so that you could flee from something dangerous, or it could prioritize the sex hormones for reproductive health. So the conductor is up there and it's communicating with, your brain has something to do with the way it conducts the master hormone trickling down to these two different forks, we'll just say for simplicity's sake. And it's also communicating with the gut. The gut and the brain communicate together, and then the brain will communicate also with the hormones, but all of this is interconnected. So you've got these two pathways going down, the sex hormone pathway and then the stress pathway. When you're more stressed, pregnenolone is going to trickle more towards the cortisol, less towards the sex hormone. So you might see a drop in sex hormones from that. And then otherwise, if you're in sort of more of a rest and digest state, so you're calm, then it'll prioritize more of the sex hormones so that you can, reproduce.
I like the analogy of the orchestra conductor. From my understanding, the way I'm kind of taking this is that hormones are kind of like the, as you said, the conductor that then pass on messages of what the orchestra being the body, the different various body parts or systems need to do. So as you said, it might start in the brain, a signal is sent, and that sends out a hormone, which then tells my heart, for instance, to start pumping faster so that I can run from a tiger, as you said, or to send blood to my other extremities. So because I'm in a rest and digest space and I can, do whatever. So I like that analogy, the brain or the hormones higher up being the orchestra conductor, and that sending out the messages to tell our body what to do. But you mentioned there that the gut and other places also play a role. So how does that all factor in? Is it the brain? Is it the gut? Is it the hormones? Like, where does it start? How do they interplay together?
So if we were looking at, I'm going to just sort of start with the gut. So the liver, for instance, so we think of the gut as, I think of it as all the digestive pieces put together. So you have the stomach, you have your gut, which is kind of the intestinal tract. You have the liver, which is processing out any toxins, but it does more than that. It actually helps in two different ways, and it helps hormones in two different ways. The liver, when it's functioning really well, it takes a thyroid hormone, T4, which is in an active form, and it converts it to the active form T3. So if your liver is clogged, you might have a hypothyroid symptoms, even if your T4 is normal. And so that's really important. The other important piece of the liver and how it connects to hormones, say, for instance, is that with women in particular, we have estrogen circulating, being produced and then circulating in our body. Sometimes it gets stuck, like the liver is supposed to take care of excess estrogen and help it leave the body when it's no longer useful. When your liver is congested, or just clogged up, like it's on overload, then your body is not going to process out the excess estrogen. So then you can start to become estrogen dominant, and then that produces symptoms. So either way, if your liver is clogged, you'll have maybe low thyroid symptoms and possibly estrogen dominant symptoms. So for men, this could look like low libido and erectile dysfunction and weight gain. For women, it might look like brain fog and weight gain. And then on the estrogen side, estrogen dominant side, that would look like the weight gain, sleep issues, maybe low libido, some fertility issues, brain fogginess, and mood swings. And it can also cause a bit of hair loss too. So there's like these different things associated with the liver. Now the gut also helps to sort of get rid of junk, right? And if the gut is inflamed, there's going to be a number of things that your body is not going to be able to do well. One, it's going to be more reactive to certain foods. So commonly inflammatory foods could cause your digestive system, your intestines, say, to feel a little bit bloated, feel a little inflamed. It could even lead to more of leaky gut symptoms or disrupt the gut microbiome. So you might see candida overgrowth. That would be one of the common things to see. If you have something like that going on, then you're not absorbing all the nutrients from your foods. So this is a big problem when it comes to thyroid health, going back to the thyroid, because your thyroid needs certain nutrients in order to do its job the best way it can. Your liver also needs certain nutrients in order to do its job the best way it can. Now, when it comes to the gut-brain connection, if you're stressed, if you're just emotionally stressed, what's going to happen is that your stomach acid isn't going to be as strong, which means it doesn't break down foods as well, meaning that you don't get the nutrients that you want to get out of your food. You might also notice that pathogens come into your body and land in your gut much more easily. So that could mean mold overgrowth in your gut. It could mean the candida overgrowth, pathogenic bacteria, parasites, all of that could, you know, get past the stomach that doesn't have the super strong stomach acid anymore. So then your gut becomes unhappy because of that whole situation. It could also slow down your digestive system. Because you're stressed, your body isn't really prioritizing digestion. So that's how the brain could affect the gut piece. And then the nutrients affect a lot of the hormone production.
Seems complicated, and everything affects everything, which is why I think this stuff is so hard for people to wrap their heads around. And then we also, you mentioned stress, and I want to come back to that and how that affects all of this. But before that, I'm interested, you mentioned with women, estrogen, obviously men have testosterone, and we both have both, right? It's just in different mm-hmm. ratios or proportions. Men do have and need estrogen. Women do have and need testosterone. That's, I think, a common misconception that people have. They don't understand that. Not that it really matters, but I just wanted to caveat that for a second. But my question is specifically with women mm-hmm. and different phases of their lives. How do hormone changes affect them, and how can we start to look at that again? The reason I'm bringing this up is because I think this is important. I think that women's health is important for men to understand as well. My girlfriend teaches me a lot, and she teaches in general about women's cycles, their menstrual cycle, and the different hormone fluctuations that happen during that. And so it helps me be a better boyfriend, brother, son, because I'm like, oh, I understand what's going on with the women in my life. So I'm curious. I want you to kind of explain about the hormonal fluctuations that women go through menopause and kind of in the different phases of their lives and how we can understand that better.
Yeah. Okay. So that's really great. So a menstruating woman, so just still having your cycles, and this could even be in perimenopause, this will still apply. Because you're still having your usual cycle. In general, say if you had a 28-day cycle, the first half of it is going to be higher levels of estrogen rather than progesterone. So you have a peak in estrogen. In that first phase, it's a really good phase to do a lot of project work, project management work. It's a good time to have team meetings to really communicate. It's a good thinking and doing period of time, let's say. Sort of in the middle of the cycle, there's a period of time where you have a good level of estrogen, progesterone's coming up, but then you have a peak of testosterone. the peak of testosterone at that time, that's a really good time to push your body. If you're physically active or if you're training for something, this is a great time to lift extra weights to build up more muscle because you're taking advantage of the testosterone. This is also a really good time to have big conversations with your partner. So because you're communicating really well, you are feeling confident at this time as a woman, you're really getting stuff done at this time. So there's like this period of 4 or 5 days sort of in the middle of your entire cycle where it's like, wow, you are just on top of it. Then at the tail end of your cycle, you're starting to kind of become a bit more introspective. Now is not the time to bring up big talks or have big talks with your partner. Instead, this is really a good time to do some introspective work, reflect on the things that you did in the first half of your cycle. You might want to stay in more, socialize a bit less, and then just sort of snuggle up with a good book, snuggle with your partner. It's kind of a relaxing period of time. So that's how I think of the cycle in general. Now, when it comes to perimenopause, so perimenopause goes into menopause, and I'll explain a bit of the difference. Perimenopause is quite simply where, you know, instead of humming along with your sex hormones being pretty good, you know, you're in your fertile years, right? Eventually they start to drop a little bit. It's like this gradual slide, and that starts to happen around late 30s, early 40s. You start to slide a little bit. The progesterone and estrogen start to dip. They don't dip in the same way though. Progesterone will go first. So it starts to drop earlier or drop more so than estrogen. So that's when you start to see a bunch of different symptoms pop up. And this is really important to know because as you go along this trajectory, you might start to notice that you're having more difficulty communicating with your partner. So some of the signs of low progesterone. So progesterone is really important for relaxation. It's the relaxation hormone. It's the calming hormone, the sort of snuggle up hormone. When you start to drop in progesterone, you'll have more anxiety. You could have irregular menstrual cycles, headaches. You could have migraines, difficulty conceiving. You might have some mood changes and depression, trouble sleeping. Some hot flashes could even pop up, some bloating, weight gain. And this kind of hangs out with estrogen dominant symptoms as well, because estrogen and progesterone, they're in a ratio with one another. And what you'll see is that ratio starts to sort of shrink. So instead of, say, in the later half of your cycle where you're supposed to have a huge amount more progesterone than estrogen, so, you know, your ratio should be like more 100 to 1, and then it starts to drop. Maybe it's more like 50 to 1 or 20 to 1. This would be considered like a estrogen dominance kind of situation. In that case, you might also find that you have a bit of hair loss happening at the same time as all the other estrogen dominant symptoms. So that's sort of the first phase. And then later on, what you'll see, sort of the second part of perimenopause, as you're getting closer to menopause, is that you'll start to see a drop in estrogen. And that drop in estrogen could be really uncomfortable for women. It could lead to dry skin. You'll start to see more wrinkles, weaker or brittle bones, tender breasts, more moodiness. You could start to experience some vaginal dryness as well. It doesn't happen to everyone, but it can absolutely happen to women. You might have some night sweats, irregular periods, of course. Your periods might be shorter, like your cycle length might be shorter or it might be longer. Still, you're going to have some weight gain around your belly potentially with the drop in estrogen. You don't have to. I mean, there's things that you could do lifestyle-wise and diet-wise to help all of this, of course. You might find that you have less sex drive as well, and then you're just generally more fatigued. So there's like these different phases, sort of the first part of perimenopause, the second part of perimenopause. And then as you're getting into this period, a lot of people will say this is menopause, but menopause is actually just one day. It's a 1 year anniversary of no period. But a lot of women will think, oh, I haven't had my period for several months. I'm in menopause. That's not quite true. Technically, it would be that you're still in perimenopause until you have that 1 year mark. So you might go on for 11 months without a period, and then all of a sudden you have a period, and then you start counting all over again, the different months until you hit menopause. And after menopause, you're just sort of humming along again, like your hormones are doing what they need to do, and they're just moving along, and you don't have those crazy fluctuations that you might have during perimenopause.
Yeah, I think that's very interesting, especially the last point about that. It's just one day. I think that's very different than how most people talk about it. And understanding, again, all of this stuff, the woman's cycle, while she has a menstrual cycle, and then how hormone fluctuations affect us afterwards. Again, my girlfriend has literally a calendar in our kitchen that has listed, you know, her phases, where she's at for each month. So that I know, she calls it her cozy cave. So there's sometimes when we need to go into a cozy cave, and there's different foods that we shop for and that we'll prepare when it's more applicable to the hormones that she's trying to heighten or lessen. And I think that, again, all of this is, it's silly to think of it as just a woman stuff, because if you're a man, you know that there's a woman in your life who's affects you in some way, right? Whether it's my mom or my sister or my girlfriend, I want to be able to understand all of us. Human nature is human nature. So I'm curious if there's one thing that you wish more women understood about hormones and menopause, and if there's one thing that you wish more men understood about hormones and menopause.
Yeah. Well, for women, what I would really want them to understand is that when they take care of their body and when they understand what exactly is happening and work with it, just like your girlfriend is doing what she does to sort of track her cycle, and she understands what she needs, and then she's able to convey it. When women understand what they need during perimenopause and menopause, and then they follow through with that, they'll find that they flow a lot more easily through this phase of life. And because their body is changing in certain ways, you're not going to be able to do the things that you once did to drop the extra weight, for instance. You're not going to be able to eat the same things. You might not be feeling like you could push yourself as hard as you used to be able to push yourself. There are a number of things. But when you accept this and you accept the beauty of your cycle in general, you are going to feel so much better just in that. And for men, what I would want them to understand is not just the same sort of things. This is the way my partner is changing over the course of this period of time. What I would really want them to know is that a lot of miscommunication happens because of these hormone fluctuations. If your partner is having brain fogginess or mood issues or things like that, it's really important for you to understand that it's not necessarily you, but you need to make some shifts in order to better communicate with your partner. And I think that this is really important because, you know, so many people in midlife, they divorce. They divorce because of miscommunication. And how much of that is based on not understanding what your body is going through during this period of time can be a big part of that. You know, it's not 100% a part of that. Obviously, there's always situations that come up, but, you know, if we could at least work on rebalancing our body and having our partner to support that so that we don't have these bouts of depression, so that we don't have this problem with sleep or decreased sex drive, all of those things, and we don't have brain fogginess and anxiety constantly, then we're going to be able to communicate much, much better with our wonderful partners.
It's interesting as you're saying that, there's something I say on the show all the time, which is that everything is the same. And that's really what the show is about, is finding those common threads throughout all human interactions and everything that we go through in life. It's kind of the same plot points keep popping up. And you mentioned for women, just being aware of the fluctuations. And that's a huge piece of everything that we do here, is how do we become more aware? Because when you're not aware of it, for instance, a woman who is going through those hormonal cycles and fluctuations, it feels like things are happening to you. It feels like, oh my gosh, I don't understand. Like, why can't I keep up with my busy schedule? Why can't I, you know, why am I being so moody? Why am I snapping? Why am I doing all these things? And it's like, you can feel so frustrated. Whereas when you understand the hormonal fluctuations and what's happening inside of your body, it's like, oh, this is that thing happening again. I am luteal or whatever it is. I'm getting there. I don't know all the things yet, but I'm getting there. It's like, and you understand it doesn't fix it or doesn't make it not happen, but understanding what's going on can make you, women, I assume, maybe feel less crazy, less whatever, because it's like, okay, this is how it's supposed to happen. And for men as well, it's like, you understand, like, this is a part of the cycle. For men, we have a different hormonal clock, and, you know, we have different things that go on inside of us, but it all comes back to awareness. You don't know what you don't know. And when you don't know, everything feels so blinding. It's like, what's going on here? Like, we're just being pushed around. And that's never a good feeling. But when you're aware, you can prepare for it. As you said, you can structure your weeks maybe around when to take on certain projects and when to put certain projects on the back burner and when to be more open and outgoing and when to be more reclusive. So I think that that's extremely important. But with all of this, right, there's certain factors that we can prepare for, but there's certain things that are outside of our control. And one of those tends to be stress from both life, work, family in general. We have lots of different places where we get stress in our lives, and very seldom do we have an opportunity to just say, like, oh, I need to turn down my stress for this week because I'm going to be whatever. So how does stress factor into what's going on inside of our bodies, and what can we do to best prepare ourselves?
Yeah. So stress, chronic stress, and it doesn't have to be super big stressors or big trauma. It could be small stressors, small trauma. Those could all just pile up, and it affects our body in a couple of ways. One, we have something called the vagal nerve, and it helps us to toggle between that stressed fight or flight state and this rest and digest, more calm state. And when we're chronically stressed, that vagal nerve actually gets a little bit weak, and it's hard for it to toggle more into this rest and digest state, this parasympathetic nervous system state. So that's one thing. So you might feel like, hey, I don't have anything really going on in my life right now. There's no reason for me to be stressed. But like, I could run your labs and we could clearly see, oh yeah, you've got something going on with stress because your cortisol levels are all wrong. Maybe they're too high at night, which is why you're not sleeping or winding down very well. Maybe they're just low all across the board instead of doing the usual thing where it should be higher in the morning, less in the evening, so that melatonin kicks on and then you get sleepy. So that's something that can happen. The other thing is just what I was saying earlier with the pregnenolone, it's going to prioritize your stress hormone, your cortisol, rather than your sex hormones. So even if you're in your 20s or 30s, you can have low sex hormones. You can have all these signs that I was describing about going through perimenopause at a much younger age because your sex hormones have dropped because of stress. So this would definitely affect fertility. So if you're in your 20s and 30s and you're really hoping to conceive, then this could be one of those things that really knocks you off, is that stress. Now you say, what can I do about it? Well, there are a number of things that we could do. First off, you want to set up your body so that you have a lot of great success with being able to manage your stress better. And that is making sure you eat a nutrient-rich diet, reducing inflammatory foods or maybe get rid of them. You could do a little elimination diet to kind of test out taking out inflammatory foods like gluten and dairy and eggs and nuts. You can also take a good quality multivitamin. And if you've been stressed for a long time, I would also add in a B complex. And then I would also add in magnesium at night, because magnesium gets depleted really quickly for people that are stressed, and that will affect relaxation and sleep. Reducing or cutting out alcohol, big one for reducing anxiety. So that'll help you move through stressful situations more easily if you're not drinking the alcohol. Other things that you could do is exercise. So exercise will help you calm your nervous system. It kind of depends on the type of exercise. I always tell my clients to test out different exercises. So for some clients, just doing gentle yoga is what they really need. For other clients, they have excess cortisol floating around because they're so stressed all of the time. Doing something much more intensive like HIIT can help release that cortisol enough for them to calm themselves down for the rest of the day. So depending on who you are, I would experiment with doing different things and then seeing how you feel afterwards. Now, that's on the physical side. And then on the emotional side, I would say there's so many things that you can do. I mean, there's the tactical things like meditation, breath work. These are really helpful. Getting out in nature could be really helpful. But one of the things that I think a lot of people don't do, especially women, we don't do, we don't give ourselves enough time. So we'll be going and doing everything for everyone else, but we're not taking care of ourselves. We're not filling up our own cup. And so what happens then is that we become so depleted. So when a stressful situation comes up, it just blows straight out of proportion. And it's really hard to manage even the smallest stressor, because we're just not giving back to ourselves like we would give to others. So we're not equally taking care of ourselves as we do with others. So taking back some of your own time will be really important for that stress reduction. It could look like setting boundaries, saying, I'm not working on the weekends. I'm not working in the evenings. It could be something like that. It could be setting boundaries around social expectations. You know, if you don't feel like going to this party or this after work event, then don't. You know, you don't have to force yourself to do anything. You could simply say no. And that's okay. If somebody wants you to do something that's like a bigger project, maybe, you know, outside of work and you don't really need, it's like an option, and you don't have the energy or the bandwidth, then just say no. You know, I think a lot of people, both men and women, can fall into this people-pleasing scenario. And there's so many reasons for being a people-pleaser. And it kind of goes back to childhood and experiences that you might have had in childhood. But when you're a people-pleaser, you'll find it's harder to set those boundaries. So starting to recognize some of these patterns that you have and then setting things in motion so that you create more space for yourself so that you can fill up your own cup. That's very, very helpful when it comes to reducing stress.
It's interesting. I'm actually reading a book right now called When the Body Says No, and it's by this Dr. Gabor Mate, I believe his name is, or pronounced. And basically the concept is that our body can only take so much stress, and that people who tend to be chronic people pleasers, who say yes to everyone else and are always giving, tend to be the ones who suffer the most from chronic illness. And with his theory or hypothesis is that when you're always saying yes, your body will find a way to say no. And that these are the people who get Crohn's disease and different cancers and IBS and all these different things that technically we don't really know what causes them. But if you look at a lot of the people who suffer from these type of things, it's the people who never learn to, as you said, pour into your own cup. The people who have always been the daughters or the sons who were mothering and fathering from the time they were young kids to their siblings or to their parents even. And it's just interesting that you bring that up. And one of the things that you mentioned was that women especially can find that they actually lose their period before or long before menopause, even in their 20s and 30s. And this is something that I learned about actually, especially in personal training, because women, when they overwork out, add too much stress. And that's one of the ways that the body learns to say no. So I believe it's pronounced amenorrhea, or I think I'm pronouncing it right. It's just when women lose their period or stop having a period because, not because of menopause, but because their body is so overwhelmed with stress that it stops functioning in the way that it should. So these type of things are not just for a certain age or, you know, a certain type of person. This can happen to anyone. And your body is always keeping score. Your body is always going to have an upper limit. So we think that we can just do more, especially for women, because women are forced into this work shape of what men have created, meaning the 5-day work week that goes on and on and on, where probably most women and society would function better if we were on a different schedule where women could work during their genius time and rest during the times where they need it. So it's just interesting to see all of this. Again, everything kind of plays out in different ways for different people, but we see the same threads, which are that there is only so much stress that the body can take. And whether it's work stress, physical stress, family stress, personal stress, it all pours into the same bucket. And for a woman, that might, when that bucket overflows, turn into a lack of menstruation. But for men, it can just be simply burnout. It can be overwhelm. It can be brain fog is something that you mentioned. It can be snapping more and all of these different things. So having those tools, I think, readily available to us. There's no one tool. It's not, just exercise and everything will be better, or just meditate and everything will be better. But having the more tools that we can have in our toolbox, the better chance we have of being able to reduce stress to a point where it's manageable. And I'm curious, you know, you gave us a lot of different things already that women and men can both use to help with their stress, to help with their hormones, right? You mentioned an elimination diet. That could be a great place to start for people. But I'm curious, Jessica, if you had one action step that you could give to everyone listening that they could start doing right now, today, as soon as this episode ends, as soon as they take their headphones out, to start living a happier, healthier life, what would it be?
Oh my goodness, the one thing. It's just hard to pin down one thing. You know, what I would lean towards first would be to wake up with the sun, go to bed with the sun. And what that does, it does a couple of things. When you're consistent, you're letting your body wake up naturally, for one thing. You're not going to spike the cortisol. When you start to wind down as it starts to get dark outside, your body is winding down already. You know, it's like right now I'm in the UK, it's dark outside. It's still pretty early, but it's dark. There are things that I wouldn't do based on this time of the year. I wouldn't eat a really big meal right now. So dinner would be lighter. Dinner would be lighter because I don't want to mess with melatonin production. So we're thinking about cycling with the daytime. So you have cortisol rising in the morning. It rises. It's sort of spikes about an hour after you wake up. But actually, if you look at someone who wakes up later in the day, their spike would have already happened before they woke up, which is really weird to think about. So it'll happen around 7 o'clock in the morning, say, for instance. That would be pretty common. And then throughout the day, you start to see a little bit of a drop, especially in the afternoon. And that's when melatonin starts picking up. And as soon as melatonin starts picking up, your digestive system starts to slow down. And so by working with this natural circadian rhythm, both for sleep schedule and for eating and for activities, like things that'll take a lot of brain power, that is a really excellent place to start, because then you're not fighting with nature. You're going along with it. So this would be an excellent first step.
I love that phrase, not fighting with nature. And that's huge. That's what I'm always going for in the show. So I really appreciate that. Very actionable. So last thing, Jessica, before I let you go, I have for everyone listening, Jessica's website and social media in the show notes so you can connect with her. But if people want to find out more about what you do or potentially work with you, where's the best place for them to connect with you?
Best place to connect would be on, well, to learn about me would just be Instagram. So And that's down below. And then my website, though, has all the information about what it's like to work with me, how you can work with me, and everything else I've got going on that's super exciting.
Awesome. And I know that you also have a summit coming up for women this January. Could you tell us a little bit about that and if anyone wants to join for that, what that would be like?
Yeah. So in January, starting on the 16th of January, going through the 19th, so it's a 4-day virtual summit, I'm going to have 17 speakers. I don't know why I ended up with an odd number. I have 17 speakers, and it's called the Hot Flash Summit. And it is for women, basically anyone 40 plus. It could be like if you're in your late 30s, I would still highly recommend it. But I've got a really wonderful group of speakers that are going to speak on a broad range of topics associated with perimenopause and menopause. And what this summit will teach you is just so many things that you could start to implement in your life right away to help you flow through this midlife stage with ease. When you balance your body and when you take actions, a lot of the action steps that are going to be talked about at the summit, your body is going to be more in balance and it's not going to have really terrible symptoms that would normally come up if your body were particularly out of balance.
That's awesome. I love that. I think it's super important. And I hope that anyone listening who falls into that category is going to check it out. And again, I'll have all that information in the show notes for anyone to go click and find out more information. Jessica, thank you so much for being here. I really enjoyed this conversation. That's it for today. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode or got value from it, you can support the show by sharing it with a friend and giving them the gift of a happier, healthier life. You can also leave a rating and review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. That helps boost the show on those platforms so more people can discover it and we can all grow together. I'll see you back here every Tuesday and Thursday morning. And until then, stay happy, stay healthy.